From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to The Patrick Madrid Show. Join Patrick for compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, and encouragement for your day. Real life solutions you can believe in. Join the conversation now at 888-914-9149. Now here's your host, noted author, speaker, and Catholic apologist, Patrick Madrid.
Good morning, everyone. Don Johnson here, filling in for Patrick today, along with Kaylin Green. Good morning, Kaylin.
Good morning.
We also are joined by a very special guest this morning, my co-host on Trending, which is heard on this network, Timory Millington is here. Hey, Timory.
Good morning. Glad to join you guys.
So you may know, if you know them both, that they are both beautiful young millennial women. And so we've got a strong millennial theme and many stories coming up later in the show. We've also got later in the show, please stay tuned for this, 7:30 a.m. Pacific, we're going to be joined by Mark Rigneris, who is a quite well-known sociologist, which is a little bit tough to do in our culture, actually, if you're a sociologist. Mark was in the news years and years ago over a battle that he had with the University of Texas. They wanted to deny him a tenure for some of his research. And thankfully, praise God, he actually won that battle. Mark has been doing awesome research for many, many years, and he has a brand new book out called Cheap Sex. It's about how the pill and porn have changed men, monogamy, and marriage. And so
I can imagine his industry must just loathe him for the research he is doing and showing here's the research and it's clear.
Yeah, he's a really good scientist. And so we'll talk to Mark later on and have some stories that relate to that. In the meantime, though, those of you in the Corona area, I'm just doing a little news update. Stay safe. Watch for there's actually some mandatory evacuations happening. The fire is still burning out there. So stay tuned to here and your local news channels, and we'll try to keep you updated. We don't want you stuck on the 91 or anything like that. All right. This week, Kaylin and I are here all week for Patrick. Timory's here today. Patrick's still pilgrimaging on the other side of the Atlantic. Do we know where he is this morning, Kaylin?
I think they're done in Ireland. I think they're heading to Fatima.
Nice.
I'm not positive, but I think that's today was the day.
And if you missed yesterday, Kaylin was in Fatima last week.
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll get more insight. Have you been to Fatima?
I haven't. I would love to hear more about your trip, Kaylin.
Yeah.
Oh, it was just so wonderful. I mean, I don't know where to start.
Yeah. Well, we'll get some tips as we go. Anyway, one of the things we want to do in this first hour of Patrick's show each day is a little Bible reflection. You know, I was talking to a buddy of mine as I last weekend, in fact, said, hey, I'm going to be on this early shift. And he said, oh, that's great. I get into my truck on my way to work at 6 a.m. Pacific, which is right when we come on the air. And he's like, you know, I'm having a hard time, frankly, lately, finding radio to listen to. And he does tune into Immaculate Heart once in a while, but he says it's just, you know, so angry, and it's really important that first thing I listen to, it sort of sets the tone for my day. And I almost like, right. I felt a little bit of pressure with that, you know. It's like, that's true. I mean, first thing, you want something that's maybe uplifting or educational or inspiring. And that got me thinking, well, what can we do first thing? And I thought, hey, let's talk about some scripture first thing. Not necessarily the daily readings. I think yesterday we may have used the daily reading, or at least Sundays. This one, as it turns out, I didn't really plan this, but this reading this morning, the parable of the sower, was our mass reading on Saturday. So just a few days ago, I didn't plan it that way. But the parable of the sower is quite famous. Jesus, another one of his kingdom parables where he's sitting by the lake, a lot of people gathered around, and he's talking about the kingdom. And he says that the kingdom is like a sower who goes out and spreads seed on many different places. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil where it produced a crop, 160 or 30 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let them hear, Jesus says. And now this is one of those nice parables. It doesn't always happen, but this is one of those nice ones where Jesus actually provides us the interpretation of it. It would be pretty sweet, frankly, if Jesus had done that for every single teaching in the Bible. But, you know, we've got the church for that, so that's nice. But Jesus offers us, just a few verses later, the interpretation of this parable. And he says, when anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in their heart. That's the seed sown along the path. The seed falling on rocky ground refers to someone who hears the word and at once receives it with joy, but since they have no root, they last only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke out the word, making it unfruitful. But the seed falling on good soil refers to someone who hears the word and understands it. This is the one who produces a crop, yielding 160 or 30 times what was sown. Now, this one, as a evangelical, this was actually quite a strong parable for me on my way to the Catholic Church, because it, first of all, fits so nicely into a certain scriptural paradigm that I found that I actually wasn't taught very strongly as a kid. And that is that you can start out on the journey of following Jesus. Like, you can pop up out of the ground, you know, you can have that conversion experience or whatever it is, and you start out strong, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to finish. Right. Like, you can start the path, you can start growing, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to finish. And combined, and this is not actually where I want to focus this morning, but combined with all the other teachings in the New Testament about how the Christian life is a race and a journey and a battle, and it's like crossing the wilderness and the Israelites. And, you know, 1 Corinthians 10, Paul warns very explicitly, don't die in the wilderness. Like, you need to get across. You need to finish. This is not something where it's a guarantee. It's a guarantee that God's going to be faithful, but it's not a guarantee that you're going to finish this thing.
Well, it's even an example for our daily lives. Like your friend was saying, I want to hear something good. I want to hear, you know, a Bible reflection to set my day. And as soon as you said that at the beginning of the show, I thought, if we haven't started our day in prayer, this parable is so pertinent. We might start with a good intention, but if we haven't rooted ourselves deeply in the soil for the day, we're going to constantly, when faced with challenges, temptations, I mean, the news, both Catholic radio, not Catholic radio, what's on the news is very overwhelming and at times very sorrowful anymore. And to start that day rooted along with our whole journey. But again, what is the soil for those roots? And even just chewing, and I just keep thinking of gnawing on the parable itself to prepare us going throughout the day and the journey.
Yeah, I like that point a
lot. That's really good.
The notion of just growing and what we need to grow, looking at ourselves as a plant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't necessarily generally eat at 4 o'clock in the morning, but today I did.
And yeah.
You know, the reason why is that I'm going to be on the air for the next
four hours,
right? But you need that sustenance. You need that, right, that energy to make it through. And if you don't, you will wither. I would have very little energy if I didn't have my coffee and my little breakfast that I had by the end of the show, right? And I think that's a great point, Timmy. It's not one that I even thought of as I was preparing this little thought here. But if you're not feeding on the word and nourishing yourself, you have the danger of withering, even day to day, I think. So that's,
well, and I even think, Kaylin, like, you just went to Fatima, and I think of soil and it needing to be fertilized, nourished, watered. Mm-hmm. Going to Fatima had to be one of those things that fertilized your soil to continue to take you day in and day out.
Definitely. I've thought that for a while about just retreats, like weekend retreats. Mm-hmm. Anything you can do for your faith life and strengthening that. And like you said, I mean, it's not that I was wavering in my faith, but it's like it gets into this routine almost, and you, it's so important to make those pilgrimages, go on those retreats, listen to the talks, do those extra things to reinforce and keep you motivated to spiritually feed yourself.
Right. And what was interesting, you talked a little bit about your trip yesterday, Kaylin, that you said, you know, it wasn't like some sort of strong mountaintop experience where you really like felt differently necessarily.
Right.
But at the same time, objectively, you were fed and strengthened by being there. And I think that sometimes as believers, we want that, you know, I really want to get something strong out of my daily devotions or something. I want to feel energized. And you don't necessarily every day, right? But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do it, right?
Right. Like,
that doesn't mean you shouldn't have the quiet time or go on the retreats or go on the pilgrimages. It, just in the same way as, you know, having breakfast or lunch or whatever, even if you don't necessarily like feel super like, oh, I'm a changed, but you still need that daily sustenance.
And sometimes it just, you just have to be aware. I think you have to train yourself to just be more aware of your surroundings. And like, it wasn't a feeling I had. I didn't feel the Holy Spirit coming into me, and I didn't get all these chills, and you know, like I didn't feel that. But when I looked around me and I saw all the other people that were there honoring Our Lady and praying the rosary together, like, that's inspiring. I can take that and be like, okay, wow, this is an amazing moment.
Right.
And well, so it's,
when your faith is strong, that's already there for a base for you, right?
Right, right. But I think anyone coming into that would be like, wow, this is amazing. Like, they're just that level of respect and reverence. I mean, I think anyone could walk into that no matter how their faith is and just be like, wow, this is so cool.
Yeah. Well, and another, we'll come back to this after the break, but another thought I had was that you, as you grow and as you are feeding yourself, there are indications when you're not doing it. Like when you get hungry, for example, you're like, oh, and I think, you know, how angry are you today? Or how short is your, you know, attention span with whatever? And like, how is your character being developed? Is it perhaps that you haven't had that breakfast, that you haven't taken that time, that you haven't prayed that rosary in a while or whatever, right? And you see yourself getting maybe a little off, and you think, well, why is that? Well, maybe it's because we haven't been feeding ourselves. All right, a little bit more on this, a great parable, 888-914-9149. You can call in anytime on the Patrick Madrid Show. Don, Kalen, and Timory with you this morning. We'll be right back after this. Don Johnson, Kalen Green, Timory Millington in for Patrick today. You can find us on social media during the show, P Madrid Show. Kalen's covering that. You can find Timory at Timory.com or at Timory on Twitter. I'm at Don Johnson Media. Please join us there. So we kicked off the show. We're going to try to do it every day this week with a little Bible reflection. And we're still in the middle of this because this is actually a very profound parable. If you're just joining us, it's found in Matthew chapter 13. It's the parable of the sower, where Jesus talks about how he, as the word, sows the seed of life, and it doesn't all grow and bear fruit. In fact, there's four kinds of different soils that the seed falls on. There's the hard, rocky ground, where Satan snatches it away right away. There's the parched ground, where it pops up, but because of the persecution, it has no root. When trouble or persecution comes, it quickly falls away. Then there's some that falls among the thorns, and the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke that out, making it unfruitful. And then there's the good fruit. And before the break, we were talking about, listen, as a starter for this parable, just noticing that not all those who pop up out of the ground bear fruit, and that this is a pretty serious deal. We were talking a little bit about this yesterday, Kalen. Like, where you end up at the end of the day is a very big topic for Jesus. Like, heaven, hell, that's your priority. Mm-hmm. Like, how are you doing as far as your eternal situation? That needs to be the first thing on your mind, I think, every day. And frankly, everybody else, as you interact with people, is your interaction drawing them closer to heaven or pushing them farther away? Because it's not a luck. As Catholics, we do not believe in not every Protestant, but there are certain sects of Protestantism that believe it. Listen, you got that one-time transaction. It's once saved, always saved. You sort of sit back, relax, and, you know, you're in. You got your card, you show it to. That's not biblical. And I knew that even before I became Catholic, largely from parables like this. But what else interests me, and this is where I want to move to, is the reasons that people fall away. And I know there's a lot of talk in the church today about all of the people, millions and millions of them. I think it's I want to say 50 million or 80 million. I remember we had the stats in front of us not too long ago of ex-Catholics in this country. They grew up in the church. They're no longer attending. They don't consider themselves at least strong believers. I would say you could look at them and say, well, whether or not you ever popped up out of the ground, you're not bearing much fruit right now. Why is that? And what's interesting is this parable gives us a very clear explanation of why people fall away. And so let's list them again, just in case you're just joining us or missed it. There are those who receive the word with joy, but they last only a short time because of a few things: trouble and persecution. And then there's those who have the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth. And those are interesting to me because they all pertain to, I believe, a desire for what theologian Francis Schaeffer called a desire for personal peace and happiness.
Worldly peace and happiness, even, because you talk about persecution. It's kind of comfort among your peers and the materialism, absolutely. Right? What makes us comfortable.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Timory. It is a desire to be left alone, for one thing. I don't want to make waves. I don't want you angry at me. I want to be just basically friends with everybody. I don't want to be considered a pariah in my community. And so I don't want any persecution. And also, I want some comfort. I want some money. I want some stuff. I want some, you know, the pleasures of this world. And in the end, the people who fall away choose those things over Jesus. Now, that's a pretty harsh message. A lot of times in America, in Christian circles, we hear, well, Jesus wants to bless you. Jesus, it's all about your personal happiness. Follow Jesus because he's going to make everything okay. In fact, we talked a little bit about this yesterday, Kaylin, that actually the Catholic life is a lot of trouble.
Yes.
and it's trouble that you even choose. Like, you know this is going to be trouble. It's symbolized by at Fatima where you crawl on your knees.
Right.
On the pavement or whatever.
It's part of being a Christian.
Yeah. And it's this notion that I'm going to choose the trouble and the persecution and the less comfortable lifestyle because that's what Jesus wants me to do.
It's the narrow path, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, the narrow path in the face of the world around me.
Right.
And again, that's a pretty harsh message. Why would Jesus say that your life must probably, and I would say almost must, you must be willing to face persecution. You must be willing to give up some creature comforts. You must be willing to stand against the crowd, or you stand a strong chance of falling away. Why wouldn't Jesus just say, listen, I'll make your life comfortable. You know, I will bless you in all sorts of material ways, and you will be loved by everyone. Why not? And as I look at this passage and think about the Christian life, I mentioned a little earlier, but it's very much like the Israelites going across the wilderness. And if you want a picture of people who did not do well, that wanted personal peace and prosperity rather than getting to the promised land, it was those Israelites in the wilderness. And you look at the Numbers and Exodus, and that's where that story is told. They, even though God was providing for them each day, manna from the wilderness, water from the rock, they complained. And they complained about certain things. They complained about fighting people like the Amalekites. I'm tired of fighting all these people. And two, I want some meat. I'm tired of this manna. I'm tired of just having water. I want some meat. I want a nice banquet. I want to be more prosperous.
Right.
And they die in the desert.
Well, it makes me think of our prayer lives in relation to how even like you're giving this example of the Israelites coming out of Egypt. They balanced back and forth between a prayer of petition and a prayer of praise. And how I think today we have this over-focus on a prayer of petition, that when we lack that prayer of praise, like the Israelites did at many points during their journey, we lose sight of the gratitude we have for what we already do have and also where we're going. What's the end goal? When we have that praise in mind, it reminds us of our beginning and of our end and every step along the way, really along the journey.
Yeah, that's a huge point, Timory. In fact, it's when I preach this message as a sermon, that's sort of my takeaway point is you need to remember what God has already done for you and you need to keep your eyes on the prize.
There's a saint real quick. I just want to say, I wish I could remember which saint this was, but, I just remember there was a saint that used to drink out of a skull for cup, I think, to remind him of death every day, because that is his goal. And thinking about that, he's going to live his life, you know, more intently.
Right.
And
reminds me of St. Alphonsus Liguori.
That might be who it is. It might be St. Alphonsus.
There's certain people who keep the term memento mori, I believe is the Latin, that remember your death, that you're going to die. And it's true, like that, keeping that in mind. But it also, what that does is it helps keep your present situation hopefully more clear. And I think this is what we here as, you know, fat and happy American Christians tend to forget. This is not our home. And indeed, not only is this not our home, but this is a trial period. Like, we are living in the wilderness. We should not expect it to be comfortable. We are soldiers. We are sojourners. We are on our way to our true home. If we forget that and think that, yeah, I'm just going to settle down here, like, I should have all the comforts of home right now.
Yeah.
That's how you fail. I mean, you're a professional, well, not getting paid for it necessarily, but an athlete at a very high level, Timory. And I know that you have to get up in the morning and train and sacrifice a lot of things to do that. You think of any Olympic athlete or any, those people have to sacrifice a lot of comfort, a lot of personal peace and prosperity if they're going to achieve their goals. Soldiers, same thing, right? If you're going to defeat the enemy, you can't be sleeping in and doing the big, you know, late brunch. No, you get up, you train, you gotta win. If we are soldiers and sojourners, that's what the Christian life is. If that's our identity and our journey or our mission, if you will, is to get to the promised land and inhabit it. If we choose personal peace and prosperity, that's what's going to cause us to lose. I mean, I think that really makes good sense then of why Jesus is so concerned about this. Persecution, wealth, and the deceitfulness of wealth and the worries of this life right here, keep you, they cause you to fail because that's what causes athletes, soldiers to fail. If you're jogging up the hill, I went jogging last night for the first time in a long time.
Nice job.
Yeah, well.
Before waking up at like 4 a.m.
Yeah, exactly. And you just think, well, there's a lot of pain, right? Not too much for me. I'm getting old. But say you're on the Tour de France or whatever. You're doing that first 5K and you get in the middle and you're like, well, the pain is too much. I got to quit.
Yeah.
No, then you lose. If you persevere through the pain and the suffering, that's the only way to win. And so I think that's to me, one of the main lessons of this parable is that you got to, first of all, give up some stuff. Yeah. Accept the persecution, accept the that money is dangerous and all that stuff, and realize, listen, I got to get to heaven. That's my main thing.
Well, before the first break, you were talking too about kind of this burning out a little bit, and you were talking about, I think it had to do with like being tired and being angry. Well, do you maybe need more sleep? If you have a headache, do you maybe need more food? Like, is there something basic on a material level that is impacting your health? Well, take it into the spiritual level, spiritual realm. What's going on where you can fortify yourself more in your faith to have, again, that deep, fertilized soil for the roots to continue to grow?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the sacraments are something that we can really take hold of in our day-to-day lives, is just go to confession more, go to Mass more. The sacraments are there for our benefit. Like, you can receive so much graces.
And of course, the sacrament, of course, is first seen in the manna in the wilderness. That's what the bread of life is, what gets us across the wilderness. We need to accept. That's the perfect picture, Kaylin. It's exactly right. Like that daily sacrament, God gives us himself. We feed on his body and blood to get us across the wilderness. And that's enough. All right. Don, Kaylin, Timory, we'll be right back on the Patrick Madrid Show. Don Johnson, Kaylin Green, Timory Millington sitting in for Patrick this morning. You can join us at 888-914-9149. In about an hour, we'll be talking with sociologist and author Mark Rigneris. He's got a new book out called Cheap Sex, The Transformation of Marriage, Men, and Monogamy. And so we're excited about that. Stay tuned for that. Before the break, we had gone over a parable about why people abandon the faith, why they don't finish their journey following Jesus. But some people are going the other way. We mentioned that, you know, there is a lot of ex-Catholics in this country. A lot of people have left the church. It's definitely the number one concern we hear about when we're at places like conferences and people coming up to the table. It's like, hey, I've got, you know, my kids have left the church, my husband's not going, this sort of thing. Well, here is an atheist. This is a story out of the UK. an atheist who has gone the other way. He hasn't stopped being an atheist, but he is going to church, and he suggests that you should do this hill. That you should do this too. Very interesting story from Andy Hill. So let me just summarize a little bit of this. He says, "My friends and family were totally gobsmacked. I'd always been such a militant atheist, ever eager to argue the epistemological toss with any hapless God botherer unlucky enough to sit near me after a few pints. If you told me back then that less than half of the UK population now consider themselves religious, I would have cheered." He says, "For what it's worth, I still firmly believe there is no God, no afterlife. You and me, baby," he says, "ain't nothing but mammals, ignorant, imperfect, insignificant." However, and that's an interesting starting point. I'm glad that he is self-aware enough to realize what his atheistic worldview means. Right? Like, not all atheists get this. They think, oh yeah, you know, life has meaning and we get to choose it for ourselves. No, it doesn't. If there is no God and you're just another mammal, popped into existence, some random reason, and there's no ultimate thing after you die, you just cease to exist. Life is meaningless. That's it. There is nothing else. And as such, you're not really that valuable.
Yeah, there's no worth to who you are and no purpose to where you're going. I mean, I could see this darkened outlook on life and religion where nothing matters, essentially.
Yeah. And in fact, we have a story later on about a young millennial man who writes quite honestly about his meaningless existence. Anyway, let's keep going, though. He says, I don't believe in God, don't believe in an afterlife, don't believe that life has any meaning. However, something about having a son... an impetus to strive for deeper meaning, a longing for some continuity with the past, made me think harder about spirituality. Most Sunday mornings before he came along, I was still up hell-raising from the night before, guzzling spirits and, you know, talking stuff with the aforesaid mates, he says. But since that sort of caper is frowned upon when you become a dad, my weekends changed radically and fast. Now, interestingly, this is something we'll probably talk a little bit about with Mark later on. Why would it be frowned upon to go out drinking and carousing and, you know, living that life when you have a kid? Of course, because you've got a kid to take care of now.
Responsibility.
And again, if you please stay tuned for the entire show or listen to the podcast later if you got to get to work or whatever, because this theme is going to pop up again and again this morning. There are certain things that should, at least, cause males to mature. And if those things are not in place, they tend to not mature. As a male, I can attest, we don't, you know, just want to go mature. We're just like, oh yeah, let me go grow up. We will take the path of least resistance if it's offered to us.
Well, and it makes me think a little bit about some of the challenges between men and women and how one of the strengths women have is that women connect a little bit deeper on a level with another person. Women see people before them in a very deep way. Men have a harder time sometimes connecting deeply and being more intuitive about other people. They have incredible other talents, but I think that what's neat about that is, Don, when you're talking about kind of diving in and all of a sudden having that responsibility, am I correct in saying that that comes with the responsibility for other people that matures you?
Yeah, well, you're right. Right. Yeah. You actually start to see through other people's eyes.
Well, you always hear that when a man becomes a father, like, he changes.
Yeah.
Well,
here's the thing, Kaylin. Even thinking about becoming a father changes a guy. Like, you will, and this will come up important. Later on, we're going to talk about the effects of pill and the porn on society. If a guy thinks that this interaction that I'm about to have may cause me to become a father, guess what? You view that interaction in a whole different light, or you run away from it, or whatever. The whole notion of fatherhood absolutely has a, some might call it chilling effect, but others would say, oh yeah, I mean, I just think more seriously about life if it might mean that I have the responsibility for another human being and that I get to raise him or her in my image in some way. I mean, yeah, of course it's a maturing thing. And so it's interesting that this guy who has a kid is now suddenly thinking about his worldview and his value and his purpose in the world. And is it true? You know, is it actually accurate that we are just, you know, meaningless mammals? And I suspect that as much as he said, you know, okay, I still believe that, when he holds his son, I don't think he believes that. And I've told this story often. It's in my movie Convinced. Jennifer Fulweiler tells it in her book, Something Other Than God, that her major turning point was when she had a kid. Like, she was a hardcore atheist, too, and she understood the implications of her worldview very clearly. Yet when she stared at her young daughter and held her in her arms, she's like, nope. I don't buy that. And it's not that I'm, you know, imposing some sort of wish fulfillment. I just do not buy that what I'm feeling towards this person right now and the way that I'm sacrificing for her and the value that I see in her is fake. I do not believe that, that in fact, my worldview must be inadequate because this person is not just another mammal.
Right. It makes me think of that one feminist from Brazil who last year she was really involved with Femme, that group that like is super radical about, you know, jumping out with topless protests, I mean, completely nude. And she had this huge conversion, even I think into the Catholic faith, but into a more moral outlook on life. And what happened is she had had an abortion. I think she even experienced some sexual abuse when she was younger. She'd reached out to different feminist, very strong feminist scholars. She was really entrenched in the movement. There was a lot of pressure to be involved in the LGBTQ movement and drugs. And essentially, when she had her child later on after a past abortion, she saw that child and part of that transformed her, and it helped to bring her into a worldview that is not just some other worldview, but that is good and true.
Yeah. The, you know, as pro-lifers, and I know you guys actually met for the first time a couple of years ago at a pro-life event. If you're not familiar with the work that Kaylin and Timory do, strong pro-life advocates, you can find them speaking at different places. And so please check that out. But as pro-lifers, we aren't just out there saving babies, which of course is what we're doing. But as pro-lifers, we are out there advancing the kingdom of God. In fact, this is what me as an evangelist, like that was always my first priority. I want to get people to heaven. And yes, I want to save babies too as part of that, but that's actually, they're integral. They're not actually separate. I mean, I get they're separate topics in a sense, but as we transform people to seeing other people as people, right? Mm-hmm. And saving them and letting people live, that advances the kingdom of God. That draws them closer to Jesus. As we keep families intact, that draws people closer to God. All of this stuff is sacramental. Like, we're made in the image of God, and as we live that out day to day, we are proclaiming that to others. And so, you know, keeping kids alive is I don't want to say it's more than keeping kids alive, but yeah, it's more than that, right? Like, this is all one part, mission of the new evangelization.
It kind of all is related in that our main message is like, you are loved, you are valued, you matter. Like, you're not just, you know, cells that have no meaning. Like, that's why we advocate for the unborn. That's why we advocate for chastity and for the family unit, because you do matter to God and your salvation matters. And like,
yeah,
if people could see that and like see their dignity, like that's what we're trying to do.
Right.
Well, and Kaylin, you're showing too, you want to create then a person that is lovable. Right. If you want to create someone who's lovable, the type of person they are, and that changes how you interact and form them.
Right. So that actually fits nicely into the next part of this guy's story. So as he has a kid, he realizes, listen, this kid has a little more meaning than maybe I thought. And he passes by some churches. When he enters a church, he realizes, what a bunch of nice people. They're singing. They're kindly, you know, they hand me a hymn book and an open, and he joins in. And he has a wonderful time going to this church. feeling loved by these people. Indeed, he says, he experienced some of the loveliest times he's ever had, and that's why he has continued now to go to church. Is he no longer an atheist? No. But, and we'll keep talking a little bit about this after the break, is he on his way because of the sacramental experience that he's having? I think so. And I think that that should be encouragement to those of us who are concerned about those. As we continue to love each other and live out our calling, other people will be affected. 888-914-9149. Don, Kalen, and Timory sitting in for Patrick this morning. We'll be right back. Don Johnson, Kalen Green, and Timory Millington. Actually, as Patrick continues pilgrimaging around, we think he's on his way to Fatima today, so that should be cool. We expect lots of good stories when he gets back next week. In the meantime, we are talking a little bit about why people do and do not go to church. Interesting story out of the UK with an atheist man who, when he had a son, decided he would return to church and was surprised by how much he enjoyed it. And he hasn't stopped becoming an atheist, but he says, you know what? At least these people are friendly and they're enjoying themselves and, you know, they sing nice songs and, you know, it's enjoyable. Now, I'll admit this sort of thing in the past would have not necessarily irritated me, but listen, you can't just go to church because of what you get there as far as, you know, good coffee. And, you know, you tend to sell it as a consumer product. You know, why would I go to this church or that church?
He probably doesn't eat donuts, Don. He's a millennial. Come on.
Right. Well, maybe they've got tofu or whatever they have there. I don't know. Good coffee, though. You do have to have good coffee at it. Is this a given now at every church? Does your parish
coffee and
have,
donuts.
Have good?
I remember growing up, it was like, if you're good during Mass, you can have a donut.
That still is the case, yeah. I think, in most places. Now, have they moved, though? I know that the trend in evangelicalism is to have not just coffee, but like high-end coffee. Like, oh. You know, let's get that Starbucks.
Like brewed
or
the right way.
Well, nice we're selling. Yeah, we've got the barista in there. We've got the high-level croissants and everything. Oh, wow. And, you know, it goes with our band. And no?
Which church do you go to?
Oh, this is everywhere. Okay. You're hard-pressed, I think, to find a evangelical, at least one of any size, that doesn't do that. So, and that, so this is a thing that I've sort of, you know, been, do we really want to go that direction? And in a sense, I still stand by that, right? Like, no, you don't just go to church for the coffee. You don't just go for some sort of temporal benefits. Ultimately, this religion that you're attending, right, either it must be true or it's false. And the only reason ultimately to stay there is that it's true. And if it's true, stay, whether or not you like it, whether or not they've got good coffee, all the rest of it. If it's false, sorry, you should not go there. And so, you know, all of the other examples of popular religious movements of the day, from Scientology to the Church of Latter-day Saints to whatever, right, they all do sort of have this, people look at them and say, well, you know, hey, these are great people and they do a lot of good in the world, and so I'm going to go and become a part of it. And that's all well and good. But bottom line is what they teach true? So now, that am I saying that this guy is wrong for attending this church because he enjoys the people? No. And so I just want to clarify, on one hand, ultimately, he has to deal with whether or not this church is teaching him truth. And if it's not, I think he will leave. Ultimately, I don't think he's going to stay around there forever, because you can get the good coffee, you can get the nice people, generally other places, right?
Well, and it's easy for people to be good and nice at church. You know, you're showing up, you're going to church. Usually people are on their best behavior. You know right. what I mean? I think there are certain places you can go and people are kind and nice. And so he's having a good environment. But like you said, what church is he going to? What is he learning? What matters to him about what he is hearing?
And here's the other thing, and this is what I suspect he'll have to deal with at some point. Let's say, and I think this may be accurate, let's say he doesn't actually find the truly loving people, like the experience that he has at church, that he actually doesn't find that other places. Should he not start questioning whether there is something underneath that these people have that is causing them to be so loving and kind. It seems to me odd. Like, it's a weird thing that he would go to the church and say, oh, well, that's, you know, that's neat that they're the people that I really enjoy being with, that they're the people that really value children like I do. And, you know, like, those are the people. Oh, but their religious affiliation has nothing to do with it. I mean, that's a weird thing, too. No, of course, that should cause him to think.
Exactly, to question. Why are they so happy? Why are they so friendly?
Right.
Well, and this is making me think, too, because we just did an episode while you were out of town, Don, filming for the documentary on Buddhism. And so one of the things we talked a lot about is how essentially the end of Buddhism is nirvana, nothingness, and how I could see why so many people are adopting Buddhism when they start with the worldview that this man has, that we're just mammals and life doesn't matter. So then a Buddhism that has and presents the virtues yet ends in nothingness, or getting to try it over and over again until you get it right through reincarnation, right? And then you end at nothingness, a state of perfect, basically no pain. Well, I'm thinking how maybe virtue, goodness to him is there. He sees that. But what is the underlying cause? What's the desire? What's the reason for the good behavior?
Right. And we as believers can help him along in the process of questioning. In fact, we had a great call yesterday, Kaylin. I can't remember her name, but she had been asking very pointed questions of her relatives, and we encouraged her in this.
I remember that.
Right? She said, you know, I'm fairly blunt about, you know, some of my questions. You know, do you think that your kid has value in this sort of thing? And, right. and like, push them to the logical ends of their worldview. And so if a person is a Buddhist, for example, say, do we actually believe that it ends in nothingness? And what are some of the logical ramifications of that? One of them, for example, within those Eastern mystic worldviews, is that there's no actual distinction between things now. So when we see things like good and bad, you know, Hitler and Mother Teresa are the classic examples. Ultimately, within a Buddhist worldview, there is no difference between those two. Same thing ultimately within an atheist worldview, by the way. If it all ends in nothing, either ceasing to exist or nobody getting judged for anything, and this is the end of both of those worldviews, there's no actual distinction between them right now. And pushing people to understand that and to admit that can help them along in their worldview. Getting back to this guy with his kid, sometimes just asking, listen, as an atheist, don't you have to believe that your children are ultimately just mammals? You know, like they're just pieces of advanced meat, to be crass about it. And some atheists
advanced
are crass
meat.
About it, right?
I mean, all it's organic kind of, here.
Yeah, you're like a computerized, you know, because some
quality.
People, philosophers, we do have, I think, honest philosophers today using terms like meat machines, right? Like that's what we are. We're just advanced computers with a lot of flesh on us, you know? Well, okay. If that's the case, there are certain logical ramifications of
it. I finally get that statement. I always just thought they meant meat eating.
No.
Meat machines.
No, like we're actually computers covered in flesh. Yeah. I maybe need to rethink that. I don't like
sense.
The term, but yeah, that's
I never understood that.
But anyway, all that to say that one, we need to be people who are attractive to those atheists walking by our churches. And, you know, we spent a lot of time, Kayla, we're not going to revisit it today, but we spent a lot of time yesterday talking about some of the animosity in our culture, especially on social media. And I don't feel like I can overestimate the damage that Christians are doing online with their mean, nasty, alienating memes and tweets and posts. I mean, regardless of what your position is, you are coming across like a big jerk right now. I'm sorry.
Right.
And that, whether or not you're right, you may be right. You might not be. You might consider that. But even if you're right, the way you are denigrating other people
right.
is so damaging, not just to you, like, you know, he's like, you might say, well, I don't care what people think of me. It's not you. They know you're
right.
a Christian. They know you're a Catholic.
They stand for.
They get that.
Mm-hmm.
One of the more sad stories I saw. I have it in our list here somewhere online, but the amount of youth that are leaving the church based on the political affiliations of their parents.
Right.
They say, you know, you cannot come and talk to me about this stuff when I see you treating other people the way you're treating them.
Right.
And I just, I mean,
the hypocrisy that young people see today,
yeah.
although they're not always correct, I think
right,
that, we
right.
can be overly judgmental, but I think a lot of people are authentic in recognizing there's a lot of hypocritical behavior out there. And I think the millennial generation has a hard time, as you know, we're the generation that just want to love up on people, as people like Katy Perry talk about all the time, right?
Yeah, let's all just, you know,
love each other. Come on, it's as simple as that. But there is something to be said of that attitude. The millennials are getting at something true. Although it's an excuse to leave the church,
certainly,
they are seeing something that is an issue. And I think first and foremost, that comes to a lot of millennials are upset with the way parents have created the family environment that has been so detrimental for so many.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about
this often. We talked about that yesterday, too.
Yeah, we did. And then on Trending, we talk about it all the time. Like, yeah, we had Layla Miller yesterday about divorce and talking about just the damage that a harsh family environment.
Right.
If their environment at home is toxic like that, do you think they're really going to want to jump on to the religious beliefs that you have? I mean, oh, yeah, let me just grab on to that. You know, that's done such a great thing in your life. I mean, no, that's not going to happen. And I just think we can spread that out, you know, look at all the areas of our life and how we're presenting. And then what's, you know, our message to our kids after that? You know, what have they seen all day in our social interactions, in our interactions, you know, with our spouse or whoever, the brothers and sisters? What does our interaction look like? And then we follow that up with, well, what are we telling them to do? Does that match up? I think a lot of times it doesn't. All right. We hear the music. The listeners, Timmy's laughing. The listeners cannot always hear the music that we hear. So,
well, they can hear this music.
Oh, can they hear that? All right. Yeah. We get all sorts of Patrick's music. Here's the number, 888-914-9149. Dawn, Kaylin, and Timmy sitting in for Patrick this morning. We'll be back.